It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Gamble on, fellas. Gamble on.
Welcome again to Gamble On, the weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, USBets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by our Senior Analyst, Pulitzer Prize finalist John Brennan. The Masters has just gotten underway as we record this on Thursday morning, and ever since you made that excellent joke a few weeks ago, John, to consult with your doctor before trying Zalatoris, I've chuckled every time.
Ask your doctor if Zalatoris is right for you.
Okay, sorry, I blew the joke. Well, the concept was still on track, and it has made me chuckle every time I've seen or heard Will Zalatoris' name since then. And if you think that's infantile, well, that's nothing compared to the jokes I've been making since I learned he was paired with Bernhard Langer for the Masters. Bernhard Langer is definitely one of the dangerous side effects of Zalatoris, right? And now I see the third member of the threesome is amateur Joe Long, which, come on, they're just making it too easy. John, if I throw in a Tommy Fleetwood joke, are we risking a PG-13 rating for this episode?
Well, don't forget Lee Westwood is in this event also.
Oh, there you go.
I've seen commercials on the Golf Channel that will help you address that malady as well. and of course, Clint Eastwood is always a guest in the booth on Sunday at Pebble Beach in February as the honorary host there. I assume the same medical attention can help either way, so to speak. Right. And I'm glad you're slightly getting hooked more into golf. And I'll take that by any means necessary, obviously. And as for golf history, well, you know, you'll be learning about Gene Littler and Tommy Armour and Craig Wood. And there's just so much more for you to learn, Eric.
Right. Gene Littler. Never heard that one, but feel bad for that guy. And I don't have too much else to say on this topic, except that my 11-year-old son cracks up every time he hears the name Dick Butkus, as he should. It is our right as males to laugh at these things.
Is he familiar with the race car driver Dick Trickle? He's not going to hate that one either.
No, he won't. I still have trouble believing that's a real name, but I guess it is. All right. Thank you to everyone for joining us for episode number 137 of Gamble On. If you missed any of our previous 136 episodes, they're all available on Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Check with your doctor before subscribing. But if he or she says it's okay, please do subscribe, rate, and review.
And coming up a little later in the show, we're going to be joined by veteran journalist and professional golf handicapper Buck Wargo to break down the betting on the Masters, which, as Eric said, is already underway. But thanks to in-tournament betting, it's never too late to consider some wagers. We'll talk to Buck about which players and which prop bets interest him most. But first, it's been a too busy week in the world of New York gambling alone. So let's get to it.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
We're going to do things a little differently for the news segment this week. There is one story, which John just alluded to, that has been absolutely dominating the U.S. gambling world for the past week. So we're going to spend the majority of the news segment tackling that big story from several angles. Then we'll finish up with a lightning round of sorts, quickly hitting on three other notable stories. But let's dig right into the big news. New York State has a mobile sports betting framework in place. It's in the budget. A path has been cleared to regulate online wagering in New York, with State Senator Joseph Addabbo, a recent Gamble On guest, projecting Super Bowl 2022 as a target date to have mobile sports books up and running. That's the good news for New York sports bettors and for the industry. There's also a lot of bad news, or at least confusing, not entirely clear news that many people suspect will translate into bad news. Here are the key elements of the deal that was worked into Governor Cuomo's budget. One, the state is planning to collect at least 50% of gross revenues from online betting. Two, there will be at least four skins, at least four brands for bettors to choose from. Possibly the number will be much higher, but At four, it's at least higher than the monopoly or near monopoly that Cuomo had floated. Three, platform providers will pay a one-time fee of $25 million, and it looks like there will be at least two of these platform providers, although that part of the language has been very confusing. Before we get into what some in the industry dislike about this proposed setup, John, I'll start with this question for you. Is mobile sports betting definitely coming to New York, or is there still a chance for the whole proposal to come apart because of excluded interest suing, some legislators not liking the plan, et cetera?
Well, it's definitely going to be legalized in New York, which will end my 3-year winning streak of betting the under on this, as you know. But you have the state's horsemen and at least one tribe not loving this already. There's some huge players that seemingly will not get a spot when the music stops. So legalized, yes, coming. Probably something gets worked out, but there could definitely be a lawsuit that mucks this up. I was in touch with one insider this week who said communication with the New York framers of all this was fruitless because a lot of them didn't even know what the words they're talking about mean with the, you know, platform and skin and everything else. And, you know, I have a feeling that's probably on the Cuomo side of things too.
Right. Yeah, I'm not even entirely sure what they mean by platform. Skin, I know, but the platform part has been confusing people a little bit here trying to parse it. And yeah, you mentioned there's a tribe that might be taking legal action. The exact statement from the Oneida Nation I have here, they said, "We have serious legal doubts about this legislation and the impact it will have on Central New York. We regret that the state is not trying to resolve these issues cooperatively, and we remain open to discussing an outcome that works for the state, the nation, and our entire region." But I guess you're saying whatever their objections, they're not going to be able to prevent sports betting from being legalized, whether they're able to put any pressure on to change the setup at all or not. They won't be able to stop this train at this point, you're saying.
Well, they could either win a lawsuit or they could win the right to simply stop paying their share of their revenue from to the state. So that would be a win for them, even if, you know, it wouldn't matter to the average casual bettor. It'd be a pretty big deal to the tribe if they didn't have to pay kind of a royalty to the state in terms of taxes.
Right. Okay. And you know, it's crazy that Cuomo says his goal is to make money for the state, but then we just have these $25 million one-time fees when, as we've discussed, he could arguably charge 20 times that or something. But, you know, so FanDuel and DraftKings are among those who expressed approval to some degree of the situation unfolding here. Not everybody has expressed approval. So let's get to some of the complaints. Gary Pretlow, one of the New York legislators who'd been pushing for sports betting, noted the similarities between the New York proposal and the New Hampshire model. And he told Sports Handle, "I don't think the New Hampshire model is working," adding, "I'm a free market kind of guy and wanted to open it to the world." Former Gambleon guest Jeff Gural, a casino owner in New York and a racetrack operator in New Jersey, said very bluntly to the Wall Street Journal, "It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I consider this a gift to New Jersey and to me at the Meadowlands, and my only regret is that Andrew won't be around to see this totally fail." John, what do you make of these attacks on the Cuomo plan and on Cuomo himself? Why isn't he just looking at New Jersey's success and doing something similar, just maybe with a slightly higher tax rate?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've known Jeff for more than 10 years, and he is a very aggressive progressive. I think that's the way they call it.
Okay.
And, you know, he initially, when he first met Governor Christie at that time, he sort of liked Christie because he felt this is a very blunt guy like me, tells it like it is. At least I know where I stand. And then when Christie said, "Well, I think I'm going to shut down the track," because it was operated by the state then. And at first, Jeff told me he thought that Christie was bluffing. And then he realized, like, no, he really says what he thinks. He's going to close it. And then he didn't like Christie as much. And then he took over the track and all that. But, you know, the way I hear it, somebody got into a disinterested Cuomo's ear late last year and said, you know, you really should do it this way. You should do it this way. And Cuomo just kind of shrugged and agreed. But I will say this, because sometimes the focus is more on how this stuff affects the professional gambler and how do you get him to stop wagering on illegal offshore sports books. And hey, I'm not sure you can do that anyway. And B, I'm thinking of a regular Joe in Brooklyn. You know, my dad grew up in Flatlands over there. And for various reasons, he only wants to bet legally. Okay. So he finds his way across the Hudson River every football weekend. Now down the road, this small-time casual bettor will have a couple of mobile sports betting options that he can legally wager on in his apartment. That's a great time saver, and he can take the money he saves from that commute and blow it all on big parlays that, well, if there's a miracle, kicks in once a year, and he's living large. So that seems like a good thing, however convoluted the rest of all this is.
Yeah, I mean, the convenience is obviously going to win over quite a few, most, if not all, bettors that had been making that trip. It's clear, first of all, that this won't be exactly like New Hampshire, where there was just one winning bid. That said, it still seems headed toward not being anywhere near as free and open a market as it should be. But, you know, I keep coming back to New Jersey, and, you know, what they're doing there is working pretty well. And, you know, customers in New Jersey who are finding themselves running into issues with one sports book or another still have other outs, other books to choose from, including hopefully one or two who won't limit their action. In New York, if there are only four or so books and they're not the most customer friendly books, I do think that's going to drive the serious New York bettors back to the offshores. If a big part of the goal is to keep your bettors betting on the regulated sites in your state, the New Jersey model, again, not perfect, but seems to work better for that than what New York is proposing. The New Jersey model is working pretty well, but at the same time, the Pennsylvania model is showing that you can do okay with a tax rate three times as high. I'm just kind of surprised that New York isn't looking somewhere in between. You know, if they taxed at like 20%, maybe they'd really be maximizing everything.
Yeah, I think all that's fair.
All right. So if New York launches mobile betting in early 2022, what does this mean for New Jersey? Also, what does this mean for the national sports betting picture? And are there any other pieces to this story that you want to comment on, John?
You know, I have a story coming up on sportshandle.com today about southern states and their strategies. And one question was, will this New York model with the high tax rate and limited operators, is that going to be a big influence on other states? And one of the panelists replied, no, period. And the others explained, and, you know, as you'll see in more detail in the article, but basically you don't go to a southern state and say, hey, check out what they're doing in New Jersey or check out what they're doing in New York. That doesn't go over well, as people will see when they read it. Right. As far as New Jersey goes, I did some math, and I know I do math. That's tricky, but it looks like New Jersey taxpayers reaped about $10 million from New Yorkers in 2020 on sports betting. And then I project up to $20 million in 2021 because the first mobile bet won't take place this year in New York for sure. For operators, they collectively scored an extra about $80 million or more from big applers in 2020, and so they could double that also in 2021. Now, New York will also quadruple the tariff on gross operating profits, as you suggested. So even the Jersey books that landed New York license won't quite break even there, where they're keeping that customer, but they're not keeping as much of their money. And some are going to get left out entirely. That's going to cost them millions. So yeah. All that said, you know, this was free money. It really was. I called it a free lunch in one article. New York could have matched New Jersey's efforts in 2018 and had this right away, and all that free loot would have never happened. So I guess I'm a bank account half full kind of guy.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading that Sports Handle article. I have not read it, or I'm not your editor on that one. So, but I'm curious because that was definitely something I was wondering about. You know, if the final product that launches in New York is pretty similar to what's spelled out here at this point, I was curious how other states without sports betting would respond, whether a Florida or a Texas becomes more likely to legalize and to come up with their own wacky approach to it. You know, New York is definitely showing us the downside to letting each state fend for itself on this stuff. Now, you know, I don't want the federal government getting involved, but at the same time, you know, there's some upside to basic guidelines on sports betting that all states would have to use as a baseline. But look, in the end, if New York has mobile sports betting in 2022, as it seems that they are certain to do, that has to be more positive than negative for the industry as a whole, right? Like it would be hard to screw up so badly that 20 million new people having access to mobile sports betting in their state becomes a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it is a net positive, just not as much. You know, I kind of have joked before about how, why, you know, to your point earlier, why don't states just take the New Jersey gambling laws and everywhere in there where it says New Jersey, they just scribble it out and write down the name of their state and just
right.
Do that. other than the only criticism is that you can't bet on college, New Jersey college teams in New Jersey, which, you know, barely matters. But
they're working toward possibly tweaking that rule anyway.
Eventually, yeah. So, so that would be it. So this panel kind of taught me that, basically, you know, 50 states really are 50 states, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't just translate one to the other. The exception being when your neighboring state starts eating your lunch, then they kind of notice finally. It took New York 3 years, but they finally noticed.
Right.
Yeah, Florida and Texas, they got their own deal going on, right? And this thing's not going to have any effect on them.
Right. How many stolen peanut butter and jelly sandwiches does it take before you notice that they've all gone missing? I guess that we've learned the answer with New York and New Jersey now.
Yeah, 3 years worth.
Right. All right. Moving quickly through the rest of the news, let's go to the first state to legalize statewide mobile sports betting in 2021, Wyoming. Whereas New York has a population of nearly 20 million, the fourth largest population in the country, Wyoming is dead last with about 580,000 people. The betting will be mobile only. Tax rate is 10%. Legal age is 18. There will be a minimum of 5 licenses and a fairly open market. But of course, it's a tiny market. John, what do you make of this news? Do you expect all the major sports books to come to Wyoming because the fees are operator friendly and there doesn't seem to be much barrier to entry?
Well, when I think of Wyoming, I think of two words, Jackson Hole. You know, in my many dealings with millionaires and billionaires over the past three decades or more, and I swear I know more of them than any other thousandaire around, that's where you go on summer retreat. You know, that said, these are old people too. But how do you not put a casino in Jackson Hole? I don't get it. And yes, I think the major players will enter the fray. You know, 100 years from now, when Utah finally thinks about becoming the 58th and last gambling state in the U.S., we're going to add a few, Eric. You know, that right. Century of experience in Wyoming wagering could help tilt the playing field in draft duels favor. Oh, I forgot to add that there will be many mergers as well.
I like this crystal ball of yours. Interesting. Draft duel is definitely coming. I don't know why Fan Kings didn't win out as the name, but yeah. In the interest of keeping the podcast moving, I don't have a ton to add. I will just note that the Wyoming Gaming Commission is supposed to put forth all the rules by September 1st, and so betting could commence sometime during football season. But anyway, welcome Wyoming, all 12 of you who will be opening sports betting accounts.
I think they're the Cowboys, right? I'm not sure.
Yeah, is that what they are?
The football team. I'm pretty sure.
Wyoming University? Wyoming State?
Yeah,
what's that?
University of Wyoming, I think. Yeah.
All right. I don't want to say too much more and potentially insult our many Wyoming listeners. But all right. Our next story is a follow-up on something we've discussed a time or two before. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has repeatedly renewed an executive order that allows people to register for mobile betting accounts remotely. But last Friday, he let it expire, forcing new bettors with new sportsbooks to register in person, I guess because the pandemic is over or something. Seems questionable, and it pushed some of the operators into overdrive trying to spread the word about starting an account remotely over the weekend before it was too late, with Barstool pushing the hardest on that front. John, are you surprised Pritzker didn't just extend the executive order indefinitely?
You know, it's funny. I just mentioned to one of our colleagues earlier this week that one former U.S. president once told me the hardest four states to make a real estate deal in were New Jersey, Rhode Island, Louisiana, and Illinois. Lots of intrigue, shall we say? So does this make any sense to me? No. Does it surprise me? No. Sure, if you wait 2 more months, then we're pretty much where if you wanted to get vaccinated by then, you did. So if somebody's superfluous trip to a brick and mortar casino leads to a dead man's hand, which I think is aces and eights, then, hey, you roll the dice to absolutely torture this metaphor with a tire iron.
I don't think there are any dice in poker, but yeah, you know, mix them all together. Yeah.
Sure.
But aces and eights is the dead man's hand. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, to your point about what that former president said, Pritzker must be getting pressure from somebody, some of the casinos, some of the more established mobile operators in the state. I'm not sure exactly who, but getting some pressure to go back to the in-person registration. It's possible that the in-person requirement could stay in place until next March if he doesn't relift it. So, yeah, this is really, really bad for some of the bettors who wanted to be able to do this conveniently from their own home. Now they've had a chance to open a lot of those accounts already, of course, but what about the new ones? This really hurts the mobile sports books. that we're planning to launch in Illinois soon, BetMGM, Unibet. It's hard to see how they can compete. And BetMGM in particular has to be really pissed since they have proven competitive in numerous other states, but they just have no chance in Illinois until this rule sunsets.
Yeah, I mean, either you believe in person or you don't. And you believe in, well, I want in person, but I'm worried about the COVID-19, so I have to delay it, or you don't. This is right. This is a little bit pregnant right here.
Yeah. All right. And our final story this week, the World Series of Poker has announced dates for a 2021 tournament series. As expected, it will not be in the summer. It will be in the fall. And our recent guest, Seth Polansky, was wrong. It will be at the Rio. The series will run from September 30th to November 23rd. With the main event starting November 4th. There will also be an online series over the summer and a WSOP Europe from November to December, but it all seems kind of subject to change depending on what happens with vaccines and variants and everything else. But the plan is to have a World Series during the fall. We'll have plenty of time to discuss it between now and then. But for now, John, any expectations about how well or sparsely attended this will be?
Well, as I recall, Seth did have a little bit of love for the Rio, so I think he's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. To play off my previous comment, these people are gamblers, for God's sake. They'll be there in full force with bells on, as the old saying goes. And will they also be there with masks on? That's the question. I will bet that they will not have to wear a mask. How's that for bold? And I'm not bluffing there. But worst case scenario, U.S. players only.
Yeah, that's a possibility. I don't think there will be a mask requirement. I would be surprised if that's the case, but I think there will be a lot of players who choose to wear a mask. And we kind of hinted at this with Seth that those who want to cover their tails have an excuse to do so for a little while. There are tons of unknowns that make setting a line on this particular main event in terms of the number of entries a very inexact science, but I'm thinking something like 5,500, which would be way down from the 8,600 in 2019, but still a respectable number. People will be itching to play. And I think the November timing will make Vegas a little more attractive. It's a terrible place to be in the summer, although you do spend almost all of your time indoors. One thing to watch, taking it a step further than the possibility of a mask requirement, this is a really complicated issue that can't be discussed properly in just a few seconds, but the controversial topic of vaccine passports, I wonder if that may play into WSOP entry at all. We have several months to see where that goes. You know, other segments of American life, I think, will confront it first, but I would expect it to come up in some capacity as it pertains to the World Series of Poker.
Yeah, that's a tough one all around.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
It is Masters Week, and if it feels like we just had a Masters 5 months ago, it's because we just had a Masters 5 months ago. Now back in its usual April spot on the calendar instead of last year's November alternative, the Masters will have just teed off by the time you hear this. And joining us now to discuss the tournament from a betting perspective is U.S. Bets contributor Buck Wargo. Buck has written for the L.A. Times, Las Vegas Sun, and countless other notable publications. But most importantly for this conversation, he lives in Las Vegas and is a professional golf handicapper. Buck, welcome to Gamble On.
Nice to be here.
So I'm coming at golf from the most casual of perspectives. When John asks his first question, you'll hear something coming from a guy who legitimately knows a thing or two about golf. But I'll start it off with a question for the benefit of me and the other casuals. What's different about Augusta and the Masters from other majors or other tournaments? What are the skill sets it favors or doesn't favor in terms of like a middling pro who becomes a threat to win the Masters or an elite pro who has almost no shot at winning the Masters?
The fact that you have the only major who comes to the same course every year, and people know this course. They know the holes. They know the par 3 12th. They see all the, they have memories of everything that's happened in the past of, you know, when Tiger won and when other people have failed and Fred Couples' ball hung up on the slope. They know 13, they 15. So they have that memory. So it's just a comfortable feeling. Whereas other majors, you're going to different courses. You might play, you know, might play them every 7, 8, 9 years. And so that familiarity is really what makes the Masters special. And then getting to your question regarding the skill set, and especially this week, I mean, it's really firm and fast. It's really going to be a premium on the second shot. I mean, last November, we had wet and soft conditions, and that's why we had a record score with Dustin Johnson at 20 under. And we're not going to have that this year. We might have some rain over the weekend or maybe Friday night, but for the first two rounds, it seems like you're going to have to really hit your spot coming in. And Phil Mickelson talked about it yesterday. You're going to have to be at the right angle, and you're going to have to hit. If you don't hit it, you're going to be off that green, or you're going to be in a bad spot. So it's really the best person coming in off the greens is going to be the person that's going to be favored to win. And if they miss it, then they have to be able to get up and down. So I just think that's going to be the best players, I think, will come to the top this week.
Yeah. Speaking of that, Buck, you know, obviously the Masters for bettors, track record is more important there than anywhere else, even than other typical big tournaments that are played in the same course every year. There's something about this course that it seems to be a puzzle that has to be figured out over the years. So based on that, now Dustin Johnson won last year under easy conditions, as you note, but he's been right there before. So we know he's established as a top player at the Masters, but you know, Sungjae Im and Cam Smith tied for second last year. That's only 5 months ago, so it seems like, hey, they're good at this course. But because of the change in conditions, do you discount that entirely, or and how much more do you look at 2019 and 18 results than you do just last November?
You're right. I mean, course form here is very important, and experience and knowing what to do. I mean, Cam Smith is not the best ball striker, and so I mean, he's a great short game putter. Im has a great long game and not as good as short game. But I'm not putting those two at the top. I know there's some people even have picked them, but I'm really going for the guys with experience here and that are really trending well, because I just think this course is, from what Phil was saying, it's a lot different than we've played in the last decade. And firm and fast conditions, you better be on your game. And that's why you talked about people that are trending, and that's why my top guy this week is Justin Thomas. And the first year he played was 39th, then 22nd, 17, 12, and 4. I mean, that's just perfect trending. And Dustin Johnson was always that way too. And in terms of when he came in and won in November. And I like that idea that the guy is getting familiar and comfortable with the course. So I definitely think Justin Thomas has to be one of your top picks this week. And I think he's flying under the radar. So I like him. I mean, there's so much people are writing about so many other things, and he just won the Players Championship, which gives him a lot of confidence. He's been overcoming a lot, the death of his grandpa, and he's had other issues, a lot losing sponsor because of what he said in Hawaii. So I just think he kind of like put the demons behind him, and I think he's ready, even though it's hard to win a Players Championship and to win a Masters. We haven't seen that since Tiger. So, but I really think he's primed and be ready this week.
All right. Well, Thomas is part of a group that I want to ask you about. There's one fun bet that I found where I think probably with this bet, you're at least going to get to sweat it until near the end. It's on FoxBet. They have a prop called Big Guns versus the Field. So it's plus 162 on the group of DJ, Bryson, Spieth, Justin Thomas, who you were just talking about, and John Rahm. On any of them to win, it's plus 162. It's minus 200 if you want to take everybody else. Which side of that seems the better bet to you?
Well, normally, I mean, I like some of the group bets, and I've done them where you group two people together. You know, that's not a very, 162, I mean, it's not something you want to put a lot of money on. But, I mean, I think it's going to be a type of player like that. I'm not as big on DeChambeau as others are. I had Rahm at the match play a few weeks ago, and so he's trending up, even though he wasn't hitting his irons as well there as he probably needs to this week. But the fact that he just had a baby on over the weekend, maybe he'll be more relaxed, and that's always been a problem with him. So I think – you might want to, for people who want to have some fun and just want to have something to root for, they want to put a little on that. I would take the favorites over that. But I mean, I wouldn't suggest that over the long run. I mean, that would be a losing proposition.
Right. Well, it's funny you mention Rahm and the baby, because I had heard someone last week before the baby was born talking about that. If his wife didn't have the baby in time, that that could be a disastrous bet. So you think with the timing of all this that it actually his chances go up? Obviously, it's better to have had the baby than not. But even just compared to no baby being in the picture, that this could possibly carry him and give him a little juice.
Yeah, we saw Danny Willett a few years ago, one right after his wife had given birth. I mean, typically, I like to play the babe angle. I've been doing it since like 2008, but I typically like it a month afterward, after they get their sleep and all that. I mean, they're more relaxed. So, but for him, I mean, he's so fiery, and that's one thing I noticed when he played the match play 2 weeks ago. He kept on, he played all his matches. By the time he got to the weekend, he seemed like he was exhausted because he was spending all this energy getting mad over the course of 3 days. And, you know, for the match play, when you got to win it and you got to play, 7 rounds, I mean, that's a lot.
Right. Although I remember, though, you know, when my kids were first born, I assumed that John Rahm can afford a baby nurse. And so those first few nights, it was more like a month in. The baby nurse is long gone and I'm not sleeping at all. Those first few nights, you've got the help there. I assume one way or another, his wife is not making him get up in the middle of the night at this particular moment.
Well, I know as a Cub fan, I've had several occasions where a player on the Pirates or somebody were playing, all of a sudden his wife had a baby the day before, and then he comes out in a doubleheader and hits like 3 home runs and sweeps the doubleheader from the Cubs. So I that's kind of what got me on the baby angle, especially with baseball players.
Okay.
Yeah, I will say that Rory McIlroy he's going to be playing with Rahm, and he had a baby, I guess, last year. Well, actually, his wife did most of the work, but
right.
And so he said, all I can tell you is I shot a 64 my first round as a father, so he'll be able to loosen Rahm up a little bit too, I think. But, Buck, you mentioned losing propositions, and that's kind of leads into my next question. You know, obviously, for a casual player, who's going to be the leader after round one? Will so-and-so make the cut? Will this player make an eagle? You can have, you know, low South African or whatever, low European. Are those all completely frivolous, you know, sort of, you know, amusement purposes only, basically? Or are there edges for somebody who really, really knows golf gambling like you do?
I think, I mean, it's not something that I do, but I know there's people that play that first round and they have a good sense of the first round. People get off to hot starts. And especially if they get started in the morning when there's good greens on some course. So there are opportunities, you know, to get some juicy prices. And so I would think the first people, if they want to have something fun in the first round, that would be one. But I mean, in other ones are the top 5 and top 10 bets. And, you know, those are pretty popular. I mean, I was looking at DJ, and to get into the top 5, he was 2-1. It's not something I would take, but I mean, he had -120 for the top 10 and -240 for the top 20. So, I mean, there are people that they're willing to, if they are confident DJ is going to be in the top 20, I mean, if they like to put some money down, that would be interesting. But in terms of pulling ones and eagles, and I mean, that would be just for fun. I wouldn't, you need to focus. If you want to win money, you need to focus on something that you're good at, that you have knowledge, you know, whether it's the matchups or futures odds.
Yeah, yeah, I've gotten to my kind of default mode has been like a top 20 somewhere around even odds. So like when I look at them, I see if there's anybody in there, and you know, I've kind of learned, you know, you don't love the player, you love the price, right? So yeah. I'm looking at that grouping, and if somebody really surprises me, like, wow, I can't believe I can get the number, that's the one I go for, which was good to me last year and been not that great to me this year.
I mean, those are great if you got somebody that's like 80-1 or 100-1. And I mean, I normally don't play long shots, but you know, in Vegas, they traditionally don't have top 5 betting like they do in Europe. I mean, the sports books around the country have more betting options for golf than Vegas does, believe it or not now.
Wow.
But there are guys like when I, Angel Cabrera, and I had him at 100-1 in 2013. That's when he lost in the playoff to Adam Scott. And I only bet him because I saw him play in the par 3 contest the day before. I mean, that would have been a perfect one. If I'd have bet him top 5, I would have gotten like 25-1 or so. I mean, that would have been a perfect scenario, but we didn't have that option back then.
Yeah, I mean, clearly golf is one of those sports where there are a million different approaches you can take to betting it, from taking it very seriously and trying to find edges to just having some fun with it, which is more the direction that I lean. I'm kind of looking for a bet that hopefully will give me some reason to watch and enjoy the last the back nine on Sunday, which there are definitely ways to shape bets that'll lead you in that direction.
Yeah, and it's fun to still keep alive. It's like your NCAA bracket and still got teams alive going to the Final Four. So it just makes for an enjoyable weekend. Yeah, and a lot of the pros, you know, here that matchups more, and that's not something that I do, but I mean, that's for people, you know, a lot of people like to do that. They enjoy the daily matchups or the tournament matchups.
Absolutely. All right. Well, great stuff. Great talking to you, Buck. Thanks for your insights. We encourage everyone who's into betting golf to follow Buck on Twitter at Brian Buck Wargo. And of course, you can find his work at various publications, including usbets.com. Buck, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Two men. $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On Bankroll.
There's no easy way to say it, John. We stink at the moment. Some of it is subpar betting. Some of it is subpar luck. But everything went wrong for us last week. I'll start with your pre-tournament bet on Gonzaga to win March Madness at +205. We got 5/6 of the way there, but they flamed out in the finals and we lost $100. I have some semi-bad beats I'll complain about in a moment, but first, just a plain old bad bet. I put $125 on the Herring-Frampton fight to last the 12-round distance, and Herring won by TKO in the 6th round. I was way off. Now the bad luck. I pegged the Orioles as a live dog against the Red Sox in their opener at +155 odds. The game got postponed due to weather. It played the next day with the same pitchers, and the Orioles won 3-0, but too late. Our bet was voided. A potential win of $93 wiped off the table. And I took under 7.5 runs in the Twins Brewers opener. And with one out in the bottom of the 9th, it was 5-2 with the bases empty. Then a hit by pitch, then a throwing error by the pitcher on an easy fielder's choice, then a hit to knock in a run and ruin the under. And the game ended up 6-5 in extra innings, which looks like we missed by a lot, but really we were just two outs from a win there. Instead, we lost $84 on that one, which means we lost $309 on the week, putting us down $1,270 overall. We also have $1,819 on hold in futures bets, including 4 Masters bets you made a week in advance. So that leaves us with, I believe, an all-time low $6,911 available to bet with this week, and I'm up first. And it occurs to me, looking at that low number, that we haven't talked about what happens to the podcast if we actually run out of our bankroll money. I think that means that's the end of the podcast. So we have to be careful. But
I would say so. But I guess the other question though is, do we return in an alternate universe? Apparently, that's.
Right, there you go. Well, I'll say this also. I think if we dip down, and hopefully we won't, but if we dip down to 2,000-3,000, we start getting a lot more conservative with our bets. No more 110 to win 100. It's a lot of 11 to win 10. But anyway, I will go with boxing here first to hopefully get us back on track. Saturday night on ESPN, good light heavyweight fight. Joe Smith Jr. versus Maxim Vlasov. Smith is about a 3-1 or 4-1 favorite, and he's known as a heavy puncher. So Smith by KO is the lowest return method of victory bet. It's only about even money. But I think Smith by decision is just as likely. Vlasov has 48 professional fights, 3 losses, all those losses by decision. He's never been stopped. And Smith, he's best known for his big KOs and memorable fights against Andrew Fanfara and Bernard Hopkins. But of his last 5 fights, 3 have gone the distance. FanDuel is paying +230 on Smith by decision. I like that return. Let's bet $50 to win $115.
That sounds good. Now I'm going to try a little bit of a hate watch play, which, you know, when you're a losing streak like we are, it's to be expected. 50 at +500 to win 250 on Bryson DeChambeau missing the cut, which is top 50 in ties out of 88 at the Masters. He has yet to excel in this course, and there could be shifting weather conditions in the first 2 rounds. And if he blows a tire, he might just skid hard into the wall. Sorry, Bryson. But on a lighter note, I have a more positive bet for the Masters. 50 on Phil Mickelson. He's praying that this course finally ends 2 too many years of being a pitch and putt for the young Bucks and regains its old toughness. And he gets that wish, and Firm Greens flummox the kids. So he finishes top 20 at a silly plus 450 to win.
Okay, so if one of those two long shots hits, that's a nice profit. If they both hit, awesome. So, okay, cool. So for my second bet this week, I'll go to the NBA. Simple spread bet. FanDuel has the Chicago Bulls as 3.5-point favorites over the Raptors Thursday night, minus 110 odds. I like the Bulls side of that. They made a big trade deadline move. They added Vucevic. They have good talent now and are clearly looking to make a push to get into the playoffs. And it wasn't clicking at all for a few games, but now they've won two straight, seem poised to maybe go on a run, or at least to beat the bad teams they're supposed to beat. And Toronto, who lost to the injury-ravaged Lakers in their last game, they're outside the playoff picture right now. They qualify as a pretty bad team. So let's put $110 on Chicago to win 100 that they cover as 3.5-point favorites.
All right, I'm going to try offensive lineman Penei Sewell of Oregon at minus 143 to go in the top five of the NFL draft, 50 to win 35. I'm getting a little conservative already, like you, Eric. you know, the vibe is that if Sewell's still there at five, somebody makes a deal to go get the big fella.
Okay. I have not done any serious NFL draft research yet. And as you know, I considered making a bet on the draft this week. And then I started looking at mock drafts and they were all conflicting with each other. And I just said, screw it. I'm not touching it yet, but I will trust that you know what you're doing with this Sewell fella. And that will do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. And thanks again to our guest, Buck Wargo. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and John at Bergen Brennan, and follow US Bets at US_bets. Go to usbets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling, and subscribe to this podcast on Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. And with that, John, please step up to the tee and take us out.
Well, I hear a few of you may have watched what I heard was a kind of entertaining Gonzaga-UCLA March Madness semifinal on Saturday night. Sorry I missed it because we were holding our 37th almost annual Rotisserie League baseball auction at the time. 11 guys aged 55 to 78, many struggling with WebEx, to be honest. One in particular, not so much figuring out the mute button, therefore treating the rest of us for most of the night with sounded like a mashup of a blender, a bandsaw, and a cat whose tail got stepped on. That was a little rough, and we loved it. Well, yes and no, we kind of did. But this was the first ever auction for us not held in person. Hard to believe you're under 40, but that's true. It's just for the previous 20 years, the same band of vagabonds has been jabbing, teasing, and what eventually would become to be known as trash-talking each other. I'm one of two to serve all 37 tours of duty, and three others date back to the 1980s and so forth. And it wasn't 12 angry men. It was more like 12 witty men. And then there were 11. One of our merry men passed away in January. And while the majority of the remaining 11 are now retired, this owner was only 58 years old. We didn't hold an auction in 2020 because several owners, including that one, were so turned off by the owners and players squabbling, they didn't want to deal with it. So I will say in retrospect, I'm grateful that I drove this owner to our 2018 and 2019 auction locations, about 90-minute round trip in each case. And another owner was part of that posse as well. I remember attending every single Thursday pub night of my senior year of college and precociously saying at the time that I doubt anybody on their deathbed in their 80s ever said, my one regret is I wish I had skipped a few of those pub nights. Well, the same principle applies here. Nobody ever exits stage left wishing they had spent less time with some of their favorite people in the world. A possible takeaway for younger subscribers when you're thinking about your online fantasy football league coming up in September, you could show up together. It might actually be fun. Just something to think about. And I know you figure, we got plenty of years left to think about something like that. And maybe you do, probably you do, maybe you don't. And with that, until next time, everybody, gamble on.